Welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you along, everybody. A little bit of John Mann early on there. As you may have heard, John Mann, lead singer of Spirit of the West, passed away yesterday at the age of 57. After battling for the last 7 years, anyway, with the early-onset Alzheimer's. It was diagnosed in 2012. Born in 1962, September 18th, 1962, so... lost sort of a guy who was very young there. This song, Venice is Sinking, as you can hear in the background, is actually written about his honeymoon after marrying actor Jill Dom on July 1st, 1989. So kind of a nice song to kick off with as we're going to get into some other stuff here that's not so nice, as we usually do here on the Hockey Show. Glad to have you along, everybody. Glad to have these people along as well as we get set. As we go around the table here, I want to welcome sports editor of the Manitoban, Jason Pajak. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I am all right. Getting ready for another fun show here. Want to welcome in host of Beyond the Panel, heard Tuesdays on this program, on this station. He's not on this program, but on the station, Brian Svensson. How are you, Brian?
Hey, hi, howdy.
Nice to have you along, Brian. And as always, the man who follows us, who always has a great opinion on the game of hockey as well. Skippy, how are you?
Very well, thank you,
all
sir.
All right. Glad to have you guys along. Glad to have the panel along. And certainly everybody can hear, all right? Everybody's loud enough?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're good.
Volume? Good. I want to start off by saying, first off, let's get the paperwork out of the way. All the best goes out to Ottawa Senators forward Bobby Ryan, who voluntarily entered the NHL and NHLPA Player Assistance Program as of, I believe, yesterday. Whatever he's going through, whatever he's dealing with, I hope he finds his way back and can get things righted in whatever's going on. There's been a bunch of articles written about him, about some of the stuff he's gone through in his life, from a crazy childhood that involved FBI raids and all sorts of moving around to, obviously, some of the ups and downs in Ottawa with that franchise. So hopefully he can find his way back. Also want to send out hopefully good wishes and lots of success as former Winnipeg Jet honorary Movember hero Paul McLean was hired today. Paul McLean getting a shot with the Columbus Blue Jackets as an assistant and special teams coach.
I thought he was an assistant somewhere, either in...
He had taken a consultant role, but then left after
that. Okay, so I didn't hear about him leaving.
That yeah, 61-year-old McLean last coached, as a head coach anyway, the Ottawa Senators from 2011-2014, where he went 114-90-35. I didn't think the numbers were that high when he was in mm-hmm. Ottawa, but apparently he did all right there. Won the Jack Adams Award in 2012-2013, while being a finalist in 2011-2012. McLean was also an assistant coach in his distinguished career for the Coyotes, the Ducks, and the Red Wings at the NHL level. So congratulations to him. But let's get into the fun stuff, because this is where we have some laughs and some talks and some craziness and some intelligent conversation occasionally. I don't know how often that happens, but we're going to start with the magic loogie that happened in the NHL.
The loogie heard around the world.
It was heard through a number of offices, especially considering that there was a suspension handed out for it. If you missed the loogie occasion, the loogie incident, Washington's Garnet Hathaway, after being cheap-shotted and sucker-punched by Anaheim's Eric Branson, basically spit on him.
Not basically, he did.
Well,
he did.
You can see very clearly.
I mean, turned and looked at him and then, yeah, just spit on him very clearly.
If you listen to Hathaway, the punch dislodged from his mouth.
Again, that's the apparent part, but I don't think that's true at all. As officials held the two men apart, I think it's ridiculous that Gudbranson threw the sucker punch number one, but a 3-game suspension for Hathaway. Agree or disagree, gentlemen?
I agree. But I also think Gudbranson should be suspended as well. This is an incident that did not have to happen on either end, because what you see is that the linesman goes, gets in the middle, one person against two, granted, in the modern NHL, two heavyweights, one person in between two, and he can't even, you know, he can't separate the two of them because their reach is too long and they're too big.
Well, they're both still hanging on to jerseys.
Exactly.
So,
it's one of those situations where just let, if you're not able to separate them, let them go. Just you've stepped in and they're not stopping. Let them settle it and go take care of something else. Take up care of another situation. Yeah. But it's crazy that it's only a one-sided suspension.
I agree with Jason. That is, it's an atrocious piece of officiating. But the entire the entire segment, the entire situation, everything that happened leading up to that was just as ridiculous and pig-headed as both of those guys taking those actions. Brandon Leipzig goes in and lays a very clean hit, a big but clean hit on an Anaheim player. I didn't catch the jersey of who got hit. The play is still going on. The ref doesn't blow it dead. And a trio of Anaheim goons decide that the best course of action, instead of playing hockey, which is what you should be doing,
correct,
is to go and attempt to beat up Brandon Leipzig 3-on-1, like all strong men do, 3-on-1, using the numbers advantage.
Leipzig's not a big dude.
No, he's tiny. It was a clean, nice hit, and then Washington goes and scores while that the shenaniganry is going on, and then because they're mad that they were dumb, they proceeded to just escalate even further. Mm-hmm. I agree with the suspension. You heard me rattling on to postseasons ago that Brad Marchand should have gotten this suspension for licking somebody. So if I'm going to, and the whole time I said that licking is exactly the same as spitting. And if I'm advocating for this many games for Marchand for licking someone, I have to advocate for this many games for spitting on somebody.
I will say,
it's disgusting.
I will say in that vein, and we'll bring up Marchand in a second here, though, that I think there should have been more handed out, as you were just alluding to, Brian. The ridiculousness that went on. I mean, I'm glad that Anaheim got scored on because they deserved that, considering that three guys decided that one guy should get, you know, knocked around a little bit. If you're not going to play defense when team's in your zone, hey.
All credit to Brendan Leipzig. He just, like, took three guys out of the play.
Exactly. I mean, you deserve what's coming to you.
Yeah.
On top of that, I think you're right. My issue with the suspension, and again, I'm not taking anything away from, you know, keeping the game clean and removing that kind of stuff out of the game. But my issue with the suspension is that I think what Brad Marchand did was actually worse than what Hathaway did, because
you can make that argument.
Marchand is actually putting spit on face as opposed to spit on jersey.
You could absolutely make that argument, and I'm not going to disagree with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing for me is that, you know, spitting is a very stigmatized behavior and in our society, because it's tied to the transmission of disease.
Right, I get
that. And coming from somebody who has a parent in the medical field, all bodily fluids, including spit, are considered a biohazard.
Right.
So it makes sense that there's actions taken, even if it does land on his jersey. You know, this is a league where mumps is a regular occurrence. So it makes sense that there's some action taken, but it's just that you're missing the forest for the trees.
But this is where I think some of it may get missed. And Skippy, I know you may have an opinion on this, but
I've agreed with everything.
But the next point, though, it wasn't player safety that handed down the suspension either. Everybody's going to go, oh, player safety is way out to lunch. Mm-hmm. What is George Parros doing? He had they have nothing to do with it, because it is not a player safety issue. That goes to Colin Campbell, who also made the ruling on the Brad Marchand just to give him a warning. It's not a player safety issue. Colin Campbell decided to warn Marchand in the playoffs and suspend Hathaway three games in the regular season. There is no equivalence there when it comes to what Colin Campbell did in terms of making a decision. And that's the problem I have with the NHL's rent. Again, suspend Hathaway if you want.
Yeah.
I mean, but and you can't retroactively.
It could be a case of hindsight's 20/20. He realized the backlash and the error of the Marchand and has to correct it now by overdoing or making reacting stronger in this case. Because
if that's
you
the
can't
case,
you can't compare this. The only comparison is
I think it really falls under the categorization that the NHL treats the playoffs and the regular seasons as two completely different animals, especially with their officiating.
And if you're going to make the claim that it is a biohazard, or is it some sort of disgusting antic that players should never do, then give Hathaway a game. I have no problem with a game, but three games takes a ton of money out of that guy's pocket, because he's not making a lot of money.
Well, I mean, when they handed out a match penalty for that, he right. automatically had to get a game suspension.
Right, but that's what I mean. Hand out the game and then come out and tell everybody, going forward, this will not be tolerated. The next punishment coming down will be much worse.
Okay, good. Make it part of the rules then, so we stop having to have this discussion.
Right.
Saliva-based offenses.
Exactly.
That's the best. That's the easiest way to word right. it. Saliva-based or bodily, like saliva-based.
And the bodily fluids, because if someone's bleeding and
throw
just starts
blood
throwing,
at somebody,
yeah. you know, you make a broader
no, that's
term.
That's a good
you
point.
You legalize it.
And let's not take away the fact
well,
that...
Well, but even just sweat and throwing it at your opponent, if you're wiping sweat off your brow, like, that's gross.
It's
yeah.
disgusting.
Yeah, and let's not take away, because Brian, you hit the nail on the head there with the playoff thing, that it's the ruling was completely different, and it's also Brad Marchand versus Garnet Hathaway. Just the caliber of player and who they are in the league is the statute.
See,
is
the
different.
League has a problem where they quote unquote don't want to decide games, right? But like, I think that there becomes a point where if a player does something offensive enough and stupid enough and against the rules enough, as the league, you're not deciding the game anymore. That player decided his own fate.
Yeah. Okay,
but the thing is, like, by not engaging with the actual written rules of the league, you are deciding games because
100%.
You're allowing actions that are illegal to
occur.
100%, which is, I think, a big problem that the NHL has with their playoffs and the officiating in the playoffs.
So here's the other question then, because if you're going to give Hathaway three games and action begets action,
right.
why wasn't Gudbranson suspended for his cheap shot?
I don't know.
Because punching people apparently is allowed.
That would be a player safety issue, and I would expect that if you're going to suspend the guy for spitting, you're probably going to suspend the guy for punching him in the face as well.
We've seen situations like that before where there have been cheap shots during scrums or during play that have been penalized and have been suspended.
Correct.
I think Rafi Torres has about 80 games worth of suspensions based off that alone.
There you go.
Well, I mean, Ty Domi was suspended for that cheap shot that he took on Niedermeyer in the playoffs.
Yeah. We got a suspension last year for that sucker punch cheap shot to the chin.
Correct, yes. And that's what I'm looking at is if you're not going to suspend Gudbranson, Hathaway has to be suspended
has
for the game.
Be.
I get that.
Has to be. You got to set the precedent.
But again, if you're not going to suspend Gudbranson, you're not really sending the right message here.
No,
Hathaway spit on him because he got punched in the face.
Yeah, what if Gudbranson hit him harder or in the right spot and then Hathaway goes down and he has a concussion?
I'm not even worried about that part. I'm just saying if Gudbranson doesn't even throw the punch, we're not talking about this.
I mean, you still have to control yourself in what you do. So,
agreed, 100% agreed on that part of it.
You don't want a Myles Garrett or anything, you know.
But
oh my goodness!
Well, that's all. That's another problem altogether in terms of that. But I'm just saying
Gudbranson deserved a suspension.
Right,
you're right.
That they shouldn't be tolerated. But
I mean, probably a game. They probably should have gotten each a game.
I would be okay with that.
Or even if you want to make sure that the equivalency is that what Hathaway did is a step above what Gudbranson did, then give Hathaway two. Fine.
Sure,
but, yeah.
Well, give him the one mandatory for the match and then one additional.
Three and one is absurd.
Yeah.
Or three and none, sorry.
Three and none
is absurd.
I mean, I guess, you know, at the end of the day, Washington beat Anaheim, so maybe
I mean, that's not a problem right now.
No, but maybe it'll be down the road. Maybe Anaheim that affects Anaheim in a bigger way. But I mean,
they weren't going to make the playoffs anyways.
Well,
they have Eric Gudbranson on their defense. I don't know.
Let's be honest. Who knows what's going to happen at that point? But looking at that again, I just think that there's. I mean, there is no place for spitting in the game. There's no place for any bodily fluid being used as a weapon of any sort in the game. I guess it's not really a weapon, but...
Act of aggression.
It's a biological weapon.
Well, yeah.
It is, by the letter of the law, it can be considered a weapon.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just think that Hathaway needs to use his brain.
You can say used as an act of aggression.
Yeah. I mean,
that's
probably a good wording of it. But, yeah, like, say you have... I don't know, early onset mono, hasn't been diagnosed yet. You haven't started feeling symptoms.
And see, mono, I mean, we were just saying, I mean, we see it usually
mumps,
at least...
monos.
Yeah, we see, you know, mumps pop up at least once a year in hockey rinks across the country.
Yeah, mono's another one that's all over the place.
Yeah, so, I mean...
And that's something that could ruin a guy's entire season.
Well, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, let's hope that nothing comes of that and nothing gets worse from that and... Maybe the NHL will finally start using its brain, but there is the magic. There is the magic loogie in terms of getting things going there. Moving on, obviously some more big news as the Earth cracked open in the middle of in the center of the universe. Mike Babcock, no longer employed by the Toronto Maple Leafs, as he was fired by the Leafs yesterday after they've lost their fifth straight game. In his time, 4-plus seasons, 173, 133, and 45, but never advancing past the first round of the playoffs. I'm not going to lie. probably time had come and to
time
get
had
rid
come
of him
last year,
right? But it's weird that you'd give a guy, and I know you still got time on the contract and you're paying him a lot of money, but it's weird that you'd give a guy who seemed to always clash with Kyle Dubas, the guy who's making the decision whether to keep him, it's weird that you'd give him the keys one more season and say, go for it.
What I think is, you know, what a lot of people miss is that Kyle Dubas isn't the sole arbiter of that decision, because Mike Babcock is a $5 million a year person. He has a contract that pays him $5 million a year, and right now there are a bunch of people sitting in Toronto. That organization is paying him $5 million
hold
to
on,
sit at home.
Hold on. If you're going to talk about money with the Toronto Maple Leafs,
I know.
We're talking about Nathan Horton getting paid. They're paying the insurance on his contract, and he's getting paid to sit at home.
But we're also talking about
David Clarkson paying the insurance on that contract.
We're also
and he's
talking
at home.
About Larry Tenenbaum and a bunch of business people that don't always
that.
Make the smartest
sure.
decisions.
And sure. Babcock probably has some sort of a working positive relationship with Shanahan.
That was where also I was going to
absolutely.
Go.
And he even mentioned in the thank you today that he would have never considered Toronto had it not been for Larry Tenenbaum. But I look at that and I go, this isn't a money issue. Like, Toronto's never going to claim poor. Mm-hmm. And they're paying guys to sit at home. This doesn't make any sense if you're Kyle Dubas going into this, because you could have convinced everybody before the season even started.
Well, I guarantee you he wanted to fire him after Game 7,
well, yeah.
after he got thoroughly outplayed and yeah. outcoached by Cassidy in that seven-game series.
For sure, yeah.
But it's something that's over his head. Like, he can make that decision. He can want to do that all he wants, because he clearly wanted Sheldon Keefe in there. He's brought him along the entire way.
Right.
But it was either somebody above him, whether
from Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah, exactly. And somebody, whether it's Shanahan or Tenenbaum or somebody else up there that said, okay, change the assistants, bring those guys in, let him, I mean,
so
DJ Smith was out the door, but
right.
give him, change things up, maybe we can make this work.
So here's the fun part, because you've just brought in the big elephant in the room. If ownership has power to tell the GM what to do and what not to do, which is within their right, if ownership has that right to derail an entire season, and I'm not saying it hasn't happened in other cities, including this one.
Happens mm-hmm. a lot in other sports.
I mean, right.
James Dolan derails every single season.
But this is what I mean. Why are you paying Kyle Dubas to be there then? And don't tell me that it's because he's great with numbers. You can get any stats guy to mm-hmm. do that. If you are that dead set on not letting the GM, and again, we see it in other cities where the hockey side is run by hockey people, the business side is run by business people. I'm fully aware of how some of these organizations run, and they make great decisions that way. Pittsburgh's one of them. They again, not that I like what Jim Rutherford's doing there, but they let the hockey guy run the hockey side, let the business guy. If Toronto is really interested in winning a Stanley Cup, why not let the hockey guy run the hockey side?
Because when you reach a certain level of wealth, you stop thinking like a normal human being.
Ah, there's the answer.
There you go. It's what we see with Eugene Melnyk every year at the Ottawa Senators. He's like, I'm going to bring these guys in and let them do what they want. 10 games in, he's speaking to the media and he's entering.
Right.
He has to be
James
kept from entering the dressing room. It's as much talk and as much you can believe that you're going to let these guys run with it. There's a certain point where almost every owner comes in, they're like, I want to have a hand in
you
this.
You don't get rich enough to own a sports team without A, either having a huge enough ego due to your own business dealings.
That's what I was just going
to
say.
Or inheriting that ego from your father.
And I get the ego part, but the ego should be about the wealth that you're accumulating and not about what can I do to disrupt this team, because every single owner that meddles never wins.
But the thing is, every single
I don't necessarily know about that. I think Cuban is a meddler in Dallas and they won a championship.
But he's the outlier.
But I think but we're talking about Mark Cuban meddling not in player negotiations, not in what the GM is doing, not in he'll go and he'll say whatever he wants because he's a billionaire and doesn't care about the fines. But he rarely gets into what happens on the court.
But it's the same thing as where they think they can run a business, or they know they can run a successful business.
And they assume that sports are like business.
Exactly.
Right.
They think that they can come in and run this thing.
Economically, I guess they are, but...
They think sports is only about business.
Yes.
Right.
But there is a business side.
Right.
But
this is what we've seen with the Vancouver Canucks year after year after year.
The economics of contracts and maybe finding market inefficiencies, I could see being a way into thinking you're good at that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there is a man management on an individual level that is required to be a good sports team that a lot of these guys don't have the ability to do anymore. They're totally detached from the ability to do that.
I mean, we can sort of just run through each of the Canadian teams, and it's happened in almost every situation. I mean, Vancouver had the problem where their owner was basically dictating who stays and who goes. Daryl Cates in Edmonton is an absolute tire fire. The whole Calgary Flames, Murray Edwards, you know, we need a new arena. We're going to move this team. Back off. And you look at the teams that, again, that sort of split that. And again, I'll take your team. Tampa Bay, Jeff Vinnick is hands off.
So hands off. It's mm-hmm. so nice.
And what happens? They win. Well, I mean, again, they don't win in the playoffs, but that's beside the point. But they win regularly, and that's the difference. Is that
there's a consistency,
right? The owners who seemed, and I'll even use that word, the owners who seem to be consistently worried about the business side do extremely well.
There are problems in a lot of different. I mean, even the Jets here.
Oh no, I know, right? And that's what I mean.
There was a deal that Cheveldayoff, and I have it under incredibly good authority, that had a couple of before the expansion draft, that Cheveldayoff had in place a deal for Marc-Andre Fleury, and Marc-Andre Fleury had waived his no movement clause to come here, and Chipman stepped in and said no because he didn't want to give up draft picks.
There was also, from a source, the option of moving the captain at one point, and that was also a Knicks deal.
Yeah. So.
And we see how well that's turned out.
I'm just saying that these things happen. But the guys who seem to get involved with their teams, because either they want to be involved or they feel they should be involved, never seem to win.
Gary Jones is one in football, too. That's just, he meddles too much, and that team never wins anything.
Right.
A lot of the times, it's the guy that wanted to, that they love the sport and they love the team, and they wanted to be involved as a player.
And
a lot
of these guys do great business for the team otherwise.
Yeah,
correct.
I mean, every single one that we've mentioned so far, with the exception of Eugene Melnyk, their teams are still multi-billion dollar industries, basically.
Well, the Senators could be if Melnyk would just get out of the way. That's the problem.
Right, I'm saying that he's the exception, the meddling owner that the team is doing poorly business-wise.
Right. Well, I remember an owner that I haven't heard a lot negative, but he's gone now, the Illiches. In Detroit.
See, and Illich was all about letting the business people run the business, and the hockey and baseball, because he owned the Tigers as well. And Tigers won the World Series. Red Wings were consistent in terms of making the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. He was a beloved owner.
You need money, come and ask me for money. I'll approve it.
Did the Tigers win the World Series while he was alive?
Yeah, Tigers won it with Dave Dombrowski as the GM.
Right.
Whatever, but 2016 or 15.
Yeah,
or whatever.
That's right. It's the same thing that we see in junior hockey, where the owners, you know, in only exceptional cases do those teams make money, but the teams that are successful on the ice are the ones where the owner comes in, they're like, I know I'm going to lose money,
right.
I'm going to pay the bills, I'm going to do what I need to do, you just go out in there and play hockey and raise these young men. But the ones that want to make money or want to make these decisions are the ones that aren't successful.
So I'm not going to...
Or you get the owner-manager, the hunters, and you know, there's exceptions to that.
So I'm not going to draw any conclusions from this, but again, 1 year earlier yesterday, St. Louis fired Mike Yeo and replaced him with Craig Berube.
Players coach.
We know how that ended.
I don't see it happening for the Leafs.
I don't see it happening. I'm not drawing any conclusions. It's just that it's happened where yesterday was a big day.
I think you're going against what you said, where this was... pretty much they're giving up on the season. That's what you'd said.
St. Louis was much closer to the playoffs.
Okay, so here's why I'm going to say that, and I'm going to back that up with this comment. According to the Athletic's James Myrtle, who spoke to Kyle Dubas today, Dubas says, quote, the Leafs are going to change the way they play stylistically and systems wise, and he's asked players to buy into that new vision. Unquote. Yeah.
I saw that Dubas during practice had already shuffled lines.
Right.
This is the team he built to work in Sheldon Keefe's system.
Right. So the Sheldon Keefe came out today and said that he really needs to get players back on board, which means that the players had not only
half the players tuned out already on Babcock, half the players were in the Marley system.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not half.
Well,
there was a handful. But
and you hear from Mike Babcock's comments, you know, like after the firing and the last couple of games, he's not talking about the stars. He's not talking about how great they're doing. He's talking about Ilya Mikheyev, Zach Hyman. I think he mentioned Pierre Engvall at some point. Like the guys that are the Mike Babcock players, the grindy, physical, blue collar players. He's not talking about the stars, and it's no wonder those guys are checked out.
I find it hard though. And again, maybe I'm just not doing the math properly, But I find it hard to believe that the Leafs are going to compete in that Atlantic Division. Again, Ottawa has the same number of wins as them. Tampa Bay has the same number of wins in them. The difference, though, is that Tampa Bay has like six games in hand.
Yep. Yep, and they need to start winning some games.
They're 2 points. Well, they're 2 points out of a wild card spot right now. The Leafs are 2 points out of a wild card spot right now. And you're going in and saying we're going to change the way we play and we're going to change the systems we use midway through a season while you're on a road trip when all the players don't want to be there.
And we all know Elliot Friedman's Remembrance Day stat and his Thanksgiving stat. So if they're going to make the playoffs,
that's also a Bob McKenzie stat.
They got to get on their horse. That's fair. Yeah, shout out to Bobby Margarita.
And if Tyson Barrie doesn't want to be there, their defense takes another major hit.
But that's another thing where I think Tyson Barrie was not being used correctly by Mike Babcock, and he's going to like it a little bit better when he plays where he's supposed to be, which is with Morgan Rielly.
But do we know the reason why he doesn't want to be there specifically just because of how he's being used?
I would assume so.
Well,
yes.
Playing on the third pairing for a guy like Tyson Barrie is a bit of a
when you're playing in a situation where your pairing is a black hole, when you're used to and you're being forced to play defensively
Haynes is playing more than you, there's a problem.
When Ron Haynes is playing more than anybody, there's a problem.
But we saw, like, last game, Mike Babcock put Barrie and Rielly together in the third period.
Yes.
They had 7 shots, 4-0 shots against while they were together. That's exactly the pairing that you would need.
But again, it comes back to defensively, both of those players aren't as reliable in their own zone.
Right. But
I don't care if they're in the other.
If you're creating so many offensive opportunities through your pace and passing, then I don't care.
I'm not denying their possession stats. I'm not denying any of that stuff. My question, though, is that, again, and I know that Vegas has been on a bit of a slide as well. But if you roll again, watching those individual players against Pittsburgh on Saturday night was an absolute gong show in their own zone. And I go, the talent level doesn't. Cody Ceci is not going to become, the next Nick Lidstrom just because Sheldon Keefe took over. No. Ron Hainsey does not become the next, the next Sergei Zubov because, oh, we got a brand new coach. I'm going to be able to play to my strengths now. No, it's still a flawed system because you're paying $38 million to three players. You cannot upgrade this team without removing a lot of parts out of it in order to get it going.
That's when
you're looking at playoff hockey, this team doesn't go more than six games in the playoffs.
I think I agree with you, but they got to make it there in the first place.
Which is also a problem.
I not that I want the Leafs to make the playoffs because I loathe them with almost every single fiber of my being.
Don't worry, we all do.
Good old prairie hockey.
But I just, with the players that they have, I think you're probably more likely to make the playoffs if you just let the horses run free. And just say, go score as many goals as possible.
What I wrote about later in the summer was that the Leafs defense is not awful. Like,
it's playable.
You've got Muzzin there, you've got Rielly there, you've got Barrie there, you've got Travis
Dermott.
There's
so much puck moving and there's so much speed.
Exactly.
It's playable.
Style you need to play is you need to move, because the way this team is built, it's built for speed, it's built for puck possession, it's built for moving the puck out. You need a pairing where one guy is the guy that picks the puck and gets that clean zone exit, the other one's the one that breaks it up at the blue line. You put two guys like that together on all three pairings, you've got both sides covered.
You have two guys like that in your entire lineup.
I mean, there are stats out there that will show you that Barrie is good at breakouts. He's good at getting the puck out.
He's fantastic.
Morgan Rielly's good at getting the puck out. Okay. Muzzin is good at breaking up play in the zone and as well at the blue line.
So you may have
same
three.
Same thing with Travis
Dermott.
But I mean,
those three guys are going to eat up half or more of the game, right? Those guys are good enough that, again, if you just let them go wild when they're out there.
Okay, so then, but what's the difference between the Winnipeg defense and the Toronto defense? Because we have three guys that can move the puck, but again, bit of a gong. Unless you're getting exceptional net minding from Anderson, you have no backup, and you're kind of
the difference is that the Leafs also have more elite scoring talent than the Jets do.
What I will point out is that the Chicago Blackhawks won three Stanley Cups with two defensive pairings.
Sure, but those two defensive pairings were fairly elite in terms of the way that Chalmerson was a beast back there.
So you need two really good pairings in the playoffs that will play 45 minutes How much time did Michael Roosevelt play in the playoffs? How much time did Niemann play when he was with, or Niemann play when he was with Chicago that 1 year?
Oh, no, he was there. Yeah, he was just there as occasional spot relief. But we're talking about three guys now. Three guys, not four. No, with Toronto. Three
Travis
guys.
Dermott's in that list.
I don't...
I think Travis Dermott is a lot better than people...
Oh, I'm not saying he's not a great player. I just think that you're asking Travis Dermott now to take a major step when...
He's been kept on the third line by
right.
Mike, or the third
he's
pair
been,
by
he's
Mike
been,
Babcock.
He's been pinned under the, he's been pinned under the bench for so long. Yeah.
What happens when you take him out from under the bench and let him fly?
But that's the question, though. Is
and you
that,
put him in a system where he learned how to play under Sheldon Keefe.
Again, that's the question of
he was one of those his, guys
where do you
who
go?
Won a championship.
His possession metrics, both Corsi and Fenwick, are through the roof, and his PDO is magnificent as well. So,
but sure,
I mean,
sure. But you can again, you can say that about Nick Petan right now. He's only played a handful of games.
Yeah, but I mean, consistently.
Also, but also, Nick Petan was stapled to the bench and kept out of play by Mike Babcock for the same reason.
Which,
but when he was allowed to play under Sheldon Keefe and given minutes in the AHL, he tore it up.
Again, I'm not denying that. And we saw him tear it up here with Manitoba as well. And we have an old school GM that didn't want to play, old school coach that didn't want to play him either. But Mike, again, the question becomes, how fast can Sheldon Keefe put that in and not get blown out a bunch of times?
I think pretty quickly. He's got young guys in Marner, Nylander, and Matthews
well,
that can adapt
be back
very
for
quickly.
A couple weeks, so.
Kapanen can adapt really quickly. And Andreas Janssen and Kapanen both played under that system with Sheldon Keefe. You've got guys on the back end that have you've got a bunch of veteran guys that are there, a bunch of guys that already play that style of hockey. And you have guys that had basically grown up as their career went with Sheldon Keefe. You've got all these guys there that the ones that can adapt. The
and
ones that
realistically, how much space and time do you really need to just tell the boys to go play pond hockey?
But that's the thing, though. Pond hockey works great on the pond, but not so great in the NHL when you're trying to win playoff games. You can't pond hockey your way to a championship.
I don't think that they can pond hockey their way to the championship. I think they can pond hockey their way into the playoffs, though.
But they
with
can
that
pond,
talent?
They could also pond hockey their way into a system, right?
Yeah.
Go play a few loose games while we slowly implement this new system.
And
it was the same thing.
I think there's enough talent there to get it to happen.
It was the same thing with Barry Trotz when he came into Washington. Because, you know, for years, coaches were trying to make Alexander Ovechkin play defense, and it
the whole team,
horribly.
Not just him.
It worked horribly. Then Trotz comes in there. He's like, okay, when you get in the offensive zone, do whatever is successful. Do whatever you want.
Score goals.
I'm not gonna deny that from you. But when we're in our defensive zone, here's how we're going to play, and here's how we're going to defend. And that was successful for them. It got them a Stanley Cup. And he went into the Islander system with way less talent. He went from, you know, Backstrom, Kuznetsov, Ovechkin, Carlson to having Matt Barzal and friends. And he got that team to the playoffs. You can play that pond hockey style. Let the kids run, especially with the young players that they have in Toronto in the offensive zone, and then have a system in the defensive zone. And it can work.
As it stands right now, the playoff probability for the Maple Leafs to make the playoffs is not good.
No, I did. According to Money Puck, it's whatever, like what, 5%? Last I checked,
Wild Card is at 7.3% right now.
Yeah, so that's low.
Also, the schedule was not that it is an excuse. The Leafs have played way too many games.
Well, they have, and I mean that doesn't help them either. They've already been way out in front of everybody else. But you look at this, and right now, fine, it's no big deal that they're only at seven. I mean, again, one winning streak, and we saw that with the Islanders.
Money Puck has their playoff odds at 24% to make the playoffs.
Yeah, hockey reference has around the same.
But
same number, yeah.
We also do forget that, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning missed the playoffs and then won the President's Trophy. It just because this season it didn't work out and you missed the playoffs doesn't mean that this team is shot.
They might go from missing the playoffs to winning the President's Trophy to missing the playoffs, and all of a sudden winning the President's Trophy is the outlier of those 3 years.
I mean, again, it depends on what happened to Kucherov now that he's injured, but I think Tampa Bay still got a good shot at making it. The key that you just hit on, though, is that, again, we're talking about a team that wasn't locked into a hundred years worth of $40 million in three players. Mm-hmm. They've got a pretty stable unit that they're running with. Right, that they're going to run with, but Toronto doesn't. Yeah. Toronto's got three players eating half their cap room up.
Okay, but there's cap relief coming, right? And also Muzzin and Barry are torpedoing their value right now, the way that they're playing.
Right.
I mean, I kind of agree with Teebs on this one. I think it's really hard to build a competitive team with that much money locked up in 3 years.
I'm not
going to
lie.
Players.
That is
it's
difficult.
Tough.
But if they're torpedoing their value,
they're
only
the right
go
players
up.
To be locked up in, but it's still tough. Mm-hmm.
They're only going to go up in value, which is tough to bring them back then. And you're already filling holes with spare parts from the Marlies. Mm-hmm. Well, not spare parts, but good parts from the Marlies. Which means you're bleeding your system dry now, and that's where Tampa Bay just keeps rolling through the guys. They let their guys develop, and okay, they can come up and they can fill a hole for us now.
But the Leafs have guys in the AHL that have played under Sheldon Keefe that can take that next
again,
step
I'm
forward.
Again, I'm not saying that they don't. I'm just saying though that you're asking them to take a veteran role now when they haven't had a game of experience in the NHL.
Well, that's what this year can be.
But then, that's what I mean, though. You've basically they've undermined an entire season without letting Sheldon Keefe get his feet. Again, they mm-hmm. should have brought Keefe up as a associate coach, whatever they want, and start working some of this stuff in. And I get that half
didn't,
the guys
didn't
have played
Pittsburgh
that.
Win a cup with the exact same sort of setup. I mean, yeah, they did trade their veterans, but
and after a couple of years, the Crosby contract looked pretty darn good. Same with the Malkin contract.
I mean, that's sure. You basically have to be assuming that the cap is going to keep going up, though, and I'm not sure that it will.
I have a little bit. I'm going to be the optimist on that. I think it's. Going, I mean,
2020,
Seattle's coming
2023
in,
is good,
and you're going to have an entire extra team of revenue coming in. And
but that doesn't. None of that's hockey related revenue. It doesn't go to the salary cap.
No, but like when the team comes in and starts playing in like the gate revenue, the merchandising.
How much did the cap go up this past the year after the Knights though? Didn't it only go up by like $1.5 million?
I think that was because the players didn't take the escalator, right?
But that's 2023 yeah. is when the CBA expires now. So we're talking about. We're running into all sorts of walls if the players finally go. Mm-hmm. You know what? Enough's enough. We want more money.
I mean, that's leading to the point where we need a soft cap and a luxury tax.
That would be nice.
Because right now the Toronto Maple Leafs are paying well over the salary cap.
I want to pitch in saying that we're all talking numbers, but there's also, to win a cup, there's certain intangible, and the group has to get together. And sometimes that takes an AHL coach coming in, joining the players that he's melded, you know, in that with the veterans and making it.
Oh yeah,
St. Louis had that bonding moments.
Same with Carolina.
Yeah, Skip makes a good point.
There's intangibles. So yeah, but we can say there's no way, but then something could happen and change that.
Chemistry is a thing that you can't really measure.
No, exactly.
But is Sheldon Keefe the type of coach where? It, like a Rod Brind'Amour, like a Craig Berube, where the players will go through a wall for this guy.
Yeah, but is anything at this point is better than Babcock? I mean, it doesn't necessarily matter if he's mm-hmm. as good as Berube or Brind'Amour. It's the fact that you know that those guys were coming into work and they were unhappy in their workplace, and
they were so unhappy. They brought Mitch Marner along. He flew out to join the team on the road trip to cheer everybody up.
Bob
McKenzie had a very long article today about Sheldon Keefe. And I'd completely forgot who he was. He was one of David Frost's four.
Yes, he was.
And the article explains what that was and how that worked and where Keefe went from there to owning a junior A team to Dubas taking him under his wing in the Sioux to the Marlies and how he's trying to separate himself from all the negativity that Frost had sort of mm-hmm. pinned, and to the point where it's like I actually had to leave work. I couldn't finish the article that I shouldn't have been reading at work anyways. But regardless, it was the end of the day. I had some free time.
That's awesome.
it was just one of those things where it's like I wanted to finish reading it because I wanted to know what intangible Keefe was bringing to Toronto that might change, the chemistry.
It's that positivity and the fact that it's what Dubas talked about at that conference a few years ago, is that from the top down, mm-hmm. everybody buys into the same system, and he gets that buy-in from his players. He won a Calder called a cup with the Marlies, getting guys to buy into that
system.
Did his
Sioux team win the Memorial?
Okay, hold on. But the Marlies, I don't remember. The Marlies are an outlier in the AHL in that they overpay for veteran players to come in and play. And I get that people are going to go, look what he did. But I go, no, he didn't do it in the same level that everybody else is doing it. And that's the thing, is that we're talking about Sheldon Keefe, who refused to shake David Branch's hand in the OHL and then told him this must burn your ass.
The article does say he regrets that. That was a mistake.
And that's
so
fine.
That's
right.
He's changed.
Right.
He's
that's
not that.
I'm not saying he can't change. I'm getting to that point. Mm-hmm. But we're also talking about a guy now that when he was bouncing around couldn't seem to find any footing. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. He figured it out. He got back into the Sioux He got back in with the Marlies in terms of following, you know, the Kyle Dubas trail. The question will become, though, you're in a different beast now. We've seen lots of successful AHL and college coaches come through, get chewed up by the system and spit out. Dave Haxtell being one of them in terms of his incredible record in North Dakota before he went to the Flyers and absolutely got booted.
We've seen some successful ones,
around.
Too, especially recently, too, though, right? Cooper and Reardon are both.
Cooper, in terms of having a good shot in there. Berube was a player, though. He knows when. Brind'Amour was a player as well. We've seen some of the players go through it. Keith's playing career was almost a spit in the ocean.
But what I think we're missing is that we're looking at, you know, we're missing that GM coach connection. I'm looking at John Chayka in Arizona, where he came. He was the computer boy that came in, and he finally got a coach that bought into what he was selling. And Arizona is starting to be successful now.
Look really good.
They look really good because he was given the time and he was able to build that team up into what he wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. And there's buy-in up and down in that organization.
And
now,
again, there is something that is to be said for coming into your job and not being miserable from the second you step in the building.
And now we finally get to see probably what Dubas has been trying to build.
Keith is also
so many years.
He was categorized as a high IQ player. You know, so what was keeping him? What was keeping him out of the out of Tampa was still a bit of the connection with Frost. The article says that Frost had given him this mentality of isolating yourself from your teammates. Mm-hmm. So he didn't have many friends by the time he got to the NHL.
He tore up his knee pretty bad, too.
That's what ended his career, right?
In an era where you couldn't get that repaired.
Right.
So he healed it, but he was hurt after like every moment on the ice, and then they didn't even get another chance, and that happened during the lockout season as well. So you know, there were many factors. So yeah, he was still a player. You can't equivocate what kind of a player he was compared to Brind'Amour or Berube. It's like, yeah, he didn't have the longevity, but there is an IQ there that was always present, and that sometimes overshadows, you know.
Well,
you know,
but again, we can talk about IQs, and Gretzky should have been a successful coach then.
There's the whole argument where, like, superstar people can't coach the average player because you're expecting
Keith,
too much.
But my thing with Keith, though, is that when he went to Junior A with zero expectations, he bought that franchise and then said, I'm going to coach it as well with Pembroke. Went in there. It took him two years, mind you. But then he won five straight championships. And I think that's where he learned his craft in terms of coaching.
He bought it, wasn't going to be hands-on, then got hurt.
Yes.
And so then he had free time rehabbing and was like, well, I'm here. Let me help out.
Right.
And that turned into more. Because
I mean, he won the RBC Cup in 2011, I believe it was, with Pembroke. So, I mean, you're looking at that going, okay, the guy's honed his craft now, but can he tell multimillionaires now what to do? And that's where they got to get the buy-in. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. They got to get the buy-in from the Tavareses, from the guys who didn't play under him, the Tavareses, the Matthews, those guys. That will be where it drives, especially with Matthews, who looked like he wanted to be anywhere but on the ice underneath Mike Babcock.
I think that's the key, though. You've got those four guys that didn't want to be that. Really, I don't know about Tavares, but you know, at least the young guys, especially Matthews, who is kind of driving the bus for a lot of that team.
Yeah.
Just to get out from under Babcock and have something different, that's got to be the buy-in. Like, I hate to bring it back to St. Louis, but that's the same thing. Is you had those veteran players, this new coach comes in, is like, it's anything but what we had before, and I'm going to buy in because I like this way better. Especially if Keith comes in and says, okay, Matthews, Marner, when he comes back, Tavares, Nylander, go play hockey. Go do what you do successfully and what makes this game fun for you and what you love about this game. Go do that. Instead of you have to play, you have to, you know, go back to minor hockey and you have to pass three times before you enter the zone and you have to.
I also didn't like what Babcock was doing with Patan and Spezza. It's like, you know, I thought there was more potential there that just wasn't being utilized.
And just the predictability of it. Like after the preseason, everyone knew Spezza wasn't going to play for this team just because the way that he was utilized by Mike Babcock in the preseason. Mike Babcock was line matching in 3-on-3 overtime. Like, well, this is not...
But that's Mike Babcock, though.
Yeah, but this is the... It's a completely warped system that he was running.
But again, that's dead puck era, though, in terms of him going back to his coaching days in Anaheim. I mean, that's dead puck era to a T.
Yeah.
Nobody line... I mean, there are people that still line match, but generally they're the unsuccessful coaches.
Yeah. So now we're having a coach that's coming in that is not from that era.
I will say, actually, I'm going to put it out to you guys first. So do they make the playoffs or not? There's the question. Because as of right now, according to the probabilities, they should end the season, according to, again, what everybody has here, about 37-33-11, which would not make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. Based upon remaining schedule and 1,000 simulations of the season,
they're gonna miss by a few points.
Okay,
I say because of the coast. If they kept Babcock, no, they changed. I like change in this scenario. I say yes.
They're definitely gonna play better, but I don't think they're gonna make the playoffs.
Okay,
no, they don't make the playoffs.
In the scenario that they have on Hockey Reference, they finish behind Buffalo. I don't know that's
drastic. I think they missed the playoffs by a point or two.
I'm just saying that's what they finished behind Buffalo, and they're five wins short of Tampa Bay in terms of making the Atlantic Division playoff.
I don't know for sure, but I think that nobody here knows.
We're just guessing.
Yeah. right.
I think Tampa has more runway to make up the deficit they're in.
Right.
Well, because Toronto
doesn't have runway.
No.
They've got 5 games in hand on the Leafs.
Yeah.
So
that's 10 points. That's a big deal.
Well, I mean, settle down a little bit. It's probably like 4 points at best.
I mean, the Jets are in a playoff spot right now. Like, anything can happen.
According to Hockey Reference, the Jets also just barely squeak into the playoffs. So if you're in second place right now, it doesn't mean you're safe in terms of where you are. Looking at everything else going on, big hockey weekend for you this weekend, Jason, the 11-1-0 Alberta Golden Bears come in on a 7-game winning streak. They're a full 11 points ahead of fifth place Manitoba, who trail fourth place Calgary by 5 points. They will be here. The Golden Bears will be here this weekend. Alberta's the highest scoring team in the conference, or the best defensive team in the conference. So what should we expect from the boys in brown and gold this weekend?
I don't know how to answer that question because, you know, I'm expecting it to be a fun hockey game and a lot of action. And it's going to be painful.
Here's the thing, though. Manitoba all time since January 2008 to January 2019. Manitoba all time is 16-29, but they're 11-10 at home against Alberta.
It's one of those weird things. They started off that right before that horrible slide last year.
Yeah,
they split with Alberta.
Yeah, they're 4-6 in the last 10 games against Alberta as well.
It's one of those weird situations where they for some reason have Alberta's number.
As long as they're playing in Manitoba,
yeah, when they go to Edmonton, it's not that great. I mean, the team has talent where they're going to be able to hang this year. Obviously, you've got that like intangible home ice advantage
for
type.
Sure.
I just don't think with the defensive system that's running this year that you're going to be able to survive 100 shots against by the Alberta Golden
Bears.
That's
true. Yeah.
So this is a team that turns low quality scoring chances into highest quality scoring chances based on talent alone. So it's going to be difficult, but it's possible.
It's going to take one of those Mike Sorrant-esque 60-minute efforts, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
As we know, the Bisons have been plagued by non-60
minutes. You mean a 30-minute effort?
Yeah, there you go. I don't know. I look at this and I just go, hopefully they can take 2 of 4 points at least. I mean, Bison's got to keep pace with Calgary. I mean, otherwise, that's a tough first-round playoff spot against the Dinos as well.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any easier because the Dinos passed Mount Royal this weekend. Mount Royal is still just as good.
Yeah. Like, it's It's a tough year to go into Alberta, no matter which university you're playing at.
Oh, even men's or women's hockey, it seems to be a tough place to play this year. One other thing I want to point out before we get going here, we've got about 10 minutes left in the show. Is anybody here a fan of Michael Burden?
Like Moose goaltender?
Moose goaltender Michael Burden.
Are you talking about the pad thing?
I'm talking about the brawl that he almost started with Jordan Nolan after Jordan Nolan decided to take a poke at him. I'm talking about CCM / AHL Player of the Week Michael Burden, who's 7-0 in his last seven games in terms of putting them on a seven-game win streak. I think I want more goaltending that sounds like, especially when comments come out like this.
So I make a save, and he didn't try to play rebound because I already have a puck, and he trying like hit me, and okay, it's my f***ing crease, like get the f*** out of here, you know?
Hey, that guy's my spirit animal.
I don't care, like, the guys tell me it's a tough guy, I don't care who's here, like, it's in my zone, like, if you're like...
That's the kind of goalie I want defending my ass.
That's that guy's my spirit
animal. Breed.
That guy's my spirit animal.
He's kind of making us forget about Eric Comrie.
I'm sorry, who?
Exactly.
Eric Comrie wouldn't do something like that.
I mean, just to hear Michael Burden come out and say, you know, I don't care who it was that was in my crease. It's my zone.
I do that once every two or three weeks.
I love that European just... honesty and dryness. It's just like you never question what a European player is thinking because they just say it.
I don't want him to veer into Ilya Brizgalov land. Like, that's just scary in terms of thinking that. But
no, this was fun.
But he's fun. But I mean, this is a dude that will skate out to the blue line to make a play because he's so confident in his puck handling skills. He has scored a couple of goals in his career already, and he doesn't give a crap who's around in the net. He's going to take a swipe.
He doesn't sound like Brizgalov. He sounds like Hextall.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's what I mean. This is the kind of guy I want to see in a Jets uniform one day.
He's going to dangle Connor McDavid at the center.
I mean, I think you're probably gonna get that chance sometime in the future, in the near future, right? They won't pay Brassaw again.
If he wants more, I doubt they'll pay him again. Yeah, I mean, there's other guys that deserve a
bit. I honestly think
Brassaw gets hurt,
but if Hellebuck gets hurt, it's not like you don't have a guy down there who's legitimately ready to go. It looks like.
I mean, I don't. You got to defend your crease, though. I mean, it's right. The refs aren't going to do it for you most of the time nowadays, which I think is it's an absolute shame. I have thoughts about goaltenders and creases and penalties, but. Yeah, I don't know. If the ref isn't going to defend your net, you got to start laying the lumber in.
Well, I mean, and don't get me wrong. I mean, Brian, you're a goaltender. You understand completely. But if a guy takes a poke at you long after you've made the save, like, it's fair game, right?
There was a sequence in a game that I had 2 weeks ago where the guy skated through my crease three times in about a minute and a half, and the third time he tried to slew foot me. So the fourth time he tried to skate through my crease, I gave him a blocker to the throat, and the ref didn't call it. He's like, he deserved it. I was like, you're absolutely right.
That is awesome. I will say, don't do that if you're listening, kids, because that's an automatic penalty usually.
I mean, yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. That's
but
bad.
I mean, I have no problem. I agree with you entirely that, yeah, defend your crease, because I mean, that's ridiculous. That
the rules say that if the guy skates through the crease and doesn't or goes into the crease and doesn't make enough effort to try and avoid contact, it's supposed to be a 2 minute penalty automatically.
Yeah.
The refs are never going to call that. It's just one of those unwritten rules.
If they go into your crease, they are, quote, fair game.
Exactly.
Jason, I'm going to point this out. I'm not going to call you out, but I'm going to point this out. You might have the toughest play-by-play broadcaster to compete against next year when Trinity Western joins the... This guy is good. I will give you a quick taste of what this guy sounds like. You may recognize his name.
And pass it down to the top of the circle, down to the goal line, looking to bring it to the net. Backhand, oh, what a save by the goalie by Pick. Back up top, 77, passes it across to 27, weighs his options, down to 9, last.
As I fade him out quickly, that's John Scott calling his very first hockey game.
What?
John Scott was in Langley, British Columbia, helping out at the Trinity Western fundraiser for the Spartan Foundation. And stuck around for the hockey game that night between the men's team and the University of Victoria Vikes. and they put him on the broadcast.
I have to compete with the legend himself.
Great job. Great
John
job.
John Scott.
All-star MVP.
Fantastic job following the play. Poor job not knowing anybody's name.
Yeah. See, I'll give him credit because he was only on there for like 10 minutes or whatever. That he did a pretty good job following the play. Yeah, he doesn't know the numbers or names or anything or whatever. But the fact that John Scott jumped into a game. I mean, we were lucky enough to have Tara Sloan do it for the women's hockey that day that she came down for hometown hockey. But the fact that he just jumped in out of, like, yeah, I'll hang around and I'll do, yeah, sure, I'll go do that.
I mean, everything you hear about John Scott, he's definitely that type of person where he's like, oh, yeah, I'll do it.
I think it's fantastic.
He did an Iron Man because somebody told him to.
Yeah. I think it's fantastic, though, that he's willing to. I mean, again, nothing is a challenge to him. I want to do everything.
I mean, he's a millionaire and he's retired now and he's got a degree in engineering, so he can do whatever he wants.
His wife's got a biomechanical engineering degree and he's got 5 daughters, and I mean,
there's no wonder he wants to get out of the
house. Gonna say getting to the rink once in a while might be fun for him. So I just want to point out that John Scott will be in the city in 2 weeks' time. He will be here for Hockey Helps the Homeless. If you're coming down on Friday, December 6th, to see him play, he will sign a few autographs that day if people are looking to come out and see him. When he will sign autographs, I cannot answer because he hasn't been drafted by one of the teams yet, but once we know, we'll get that posted as well. Last thing I want to point out before we get out of here, we got about 2 minutes to go. Arizona Coyotes did a great thing the other night. Hockey Fights Cancer. Everybody knows about Hockey Fights Cancer. I'm not sure if anybody saw the story. I hope they did. If you didn't, it's on Hockey Blog in Canada about a young lady by the name of Leighton Accardo. Leighton, unfortunately, was diagnosed with cancer. She's a huge baseball player down in Arizona. Loves the Coyotes in terms of a hockey team. She plays hockey. And was signed for a day by the Coyotes to come in and basically do all the puck drop and everything or whatever.
Nice.
In full uniform, she's on the ice and is going to drop the puck between the two captains, the Calgary Flames' Mark Giordano.
Oh,
Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And instead, Oliver Ekman-Larsson handed her the stick, and he dropped the puck for her, which was incredible to see. Video is on Hockey Blog in Canada. I think this is the reason, and again, people can call me crazy if you want, this is how hockey should be done for everybody in terms of giving the kids this kind of experience. I don't care. I know Hockey Fights Cancer is a big thing, and I know that they're doing it because she's, again, fighting cancer. But I think if there was more of that, and again, we saw it on Saturday after the Bisons played and beat Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. The kids that were out skating with the Bisons post-game looked like they were having the time of their life. I think there needs to be more of that inclusion by the hockey, but again, not just from NHL teams, but from all high level teams.
Yeah, and this is what we saw we see every year with the Leafs kids game.
Yeah,
it's a great experience. And I was at the camp that I volunteer with, Camp Quality. We partnered with the Manitoba Moose for Hockey Fights Cancer.
Oh, right on.
And we had kids out there, and one of our campers went and dropped the puck for Hockey Fights Cancer. I have never seen her so happy just to be out there and to be a part of that. Yeah. And the kids were just absolutely loving it. Us volunteers were loving it, too. We got free tickets to a Moose game.
That's fantastic,
But it's just, you know, it's something that should be done every single day and to help grow this game.
Yeah, I mean,
there's something special about accessing something that you see from
a distance. Yeah.
You're behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I've seen the same thing with people I've invited onto my show, onto the radio. It's like, oh, the radio. Yeah. Like, the radio exists there in my car or wherever.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. Pull back the curtain. It's huge.
Pull back the curtain, come into the studio, and they're like, wow. And they get nervous, and these aren't people who are normally nervous at things. Yeah. When you take somebody into a hockey game, into the locker room, to do these things, they're behind the curtain, and anything like that. It releases endorphins and...
Yeah. Well, we'll go one step further, because Brian...
Good for mental health.
I think Brian made most of their nights just by putting them on camera that night as well. They were dancing. They were busting a move like there was no tomorrow.
I mean, everybody loves Baby Shark, man. Come on.
Please don't get that stuff in my head.
Those, I mean, you see it everywhere. Those kids,
I introduced my niece and nephew to What Does the Fox Say Today?
That's a good one. I had an experience like that when I was very small. I was a young goalie just learning how to play, and I met Matt Cockle, who found out I was a goaltender while he was playing with the Winnipeg South Blues, and he's like, well, why don't you come to the game? And then, I was at the game, and he came up afterwards. He's like, why don't you just come down to the dressing room and come check it out? and I got a stick signed by every single player of the Sal Blues that year. You know, and he and I have kept in touch through that, and it was such an immense impact on my life and what I wanted to do. So yeah,
that's fantastic. I mean, that's exactly the idea, though. So kudos to Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Kudos to the NHL for doing at least one thing right last week, considering they did so much wrong. But with that, though, we're going to get out of here. We're going to let Skippy get a takeover because he's getting ready for Free Range Radio here momentarily. Anything coming up on... Oh, you guys moved to a new time, didn't you?
Yes.
Tuesday, yeah.
So Hear the Herd is now 11:30 to noon. So right after Let's Talk About 11 to 11:30, I will be still in the booth for Hear the Herd. So...
I was going to say, what's
on Tuesdays?
Tuesdays will be very filled.
What the heck moved in before bench jockeys then on Fridays?
I guess it's going to be empty unless they're moving Tobin Tuesdays over there. I don't know. One hour
of bench jockeys. Let's go.
I was going to ask you what's on the show tomorrow. And I was like, wait, no, that's not right. Yeah. That's not till Tuesday now.
I already had the episode.
You're on bench jockeys tomorrow then, Brian, but you also got Beyond the Panel as well.
And the pity party.
Oh, that's right. The pity party. That's right. Totally.
Brian's always here.
I forgot about that part of it.
Yeah. So bench jockeys tomorrow, I'm assuming we'll be talking about Yasmany Grandal and the Hall of Fame ballot in which you should, if you are all not that any BWAA voters are going to be listening, but you should be voting for Larry Walker. Pity party tomorrow should be pretty good. And Beyond the Panel next week, we're going to be talking about Preacher.
Nice.
One of my favorites.
It's so good.
There we go.
Yep.
Skippy, I won't let you preview it because your show's coming up right away, but if you want to preview it, feel free.
I've got to start off with some Spirit of the West as we go out with some Spirit of the West.
That's true. Coming up right now. Venice is singing Spirit of the West coming up as we celebrate the life of John Mann, the lead singer who unfortunately passed away. It is another version, episode of The Hockey Show, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us here on a Thursday night. Enjoy 90s night if you're out in St. Louis and certainly watching at home as the Calgary Flames play against the Gretzky-esque St. Louis Blues tonight. All that happens on your TV for that. Tune in there. Otherwise, tune in next Thursday here on The Hockey Show on 101.5, where I'll be out at Transcona Collegiate talking to the expansion Transcona Titans next week, as we find out what it's like to be an expansion team in the Winnipeg Female Women's Hockey League. For that, all that next week here on The Hockey Show 101.5 UMFM.